Good morning, Liberty.
Morning.
How are we all today?
Good.
Won't you turn with me to Matthew 5, verse 1? And as we get there, just to remind ourselves, we kicked off last week a series on the kingdom of heaven. Matt kicked us off, and he introduced us to a king that is about to speak to us. And so today, we're going to just explore the theme of what it is to be a blessed people that already belong to God's kingdom. So let's read together, Matthew 5. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you." The Sermon on the Mount, and more specifically this portion, which we call the Beatitudes, is deeply familiar to most of us. You may have seen the words printed on posters, quoted in devotionals. You've heard them whispered in moments of heartache and loss as words of comfort, and you've leaned on them in deep moments of pain. And I'm sure this passage has and continues to offer comfort and hope to thousands, if not millions, of Christians around the world even today. But it's worth pausing for a moment to really reflect on what a profound moment this really was. Up on that mountainside with his disciples, something really, really important was taking place. And last week, Matt spoke about kingdom language and how foreign it is in this present day to us. So difficult to compute when we're speaking about kings and kingdoms, when we live in a world of democracies. But the reality is the Bible is dripping with kingdom language, and it's rich in kingdom imagery. It's no coincidence at all that we find ourselves in this text up on a mountainside. In Israel's history, mountains were places of revelation and covenant. If you really want to get familiar with some kingdom language, read one such example in Exodus 19 to 20. This was not scripted, by the way. This is where the Lord meets Moses, and it culminates in the Ten Commandments. The Lord calls Moses from the mountain. Exodus 19, 4-6. "You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." That's kingdom language. And that declaration happened on a mountain. Identity was formed there. Covenant was established there on Mount Sinai. The shape of life under God's rule was revealed to the Israelites there on a mountain. And that pattern at Mount Sinai is important. First, there was redemption. God rescued his people from Israel. And then, revelation. He brings them onto the mountain and tells them who they are and how they are to live as his covenant people. And in Matthew 5, Jesus goes up the mountainside to begin to teach. It's possible that he deliberately chose that mountainside as a place to teach. This would not have been lost on the observers of the day. It's a clue that something really important and significant was happening. The king was addressing his people. Just as at Sinai, God declared who his redeemed people were before telling them how to live, here on this mountain, Jesus declares who his kingdom people are before he instructs them how to live. Can you see the pattern? And while we don't have time to go into the detail of each of the Beatitudes today, that would require a whole sermon, a whole series at least on its own, it's helpful to dig into some of the aspects of identity that our King gives to us. And the first one, that we are given a kingdom identity as citizens of heaven. We saw last week in Matthew 4:23 that Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. The Sermon on the Mount is preceded by the teaching of the gospel, and it was Jesus' disciples that came to him when he began teaching on the mountainside. It's reasonable to assume that Jesus was talking to those that already belonged in his kingdom. And we see this in the verses that sandwich the Beatitudes. Matthew 5, verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And verse 10, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." For theirs is the kingdom. It's present tense. Can you see that? It's not will be. It's now. Right now. Maybe in South African parlance, not just now, not now, not in a while. Now, in this moment. And if you look closely, at the rest of the promises in the Beatitudes, there is a contrast. Most of them we see are in the future tense. They will be comforted. They will inherit the earth. They will be filled. They will see God. So the Beatitudes hold together two realities in one. Through Jesus' ministry, the kingdom has already broken into the world and already belongs to God's people. But the other reality is that the fullness of that kingdom is still to be experienced by us. And notice who this kingdom belongs to. It belongs to the poor in spirit. It belongs to those who know that they are spiritually bankrupt. The poor in spirit are those who recognize their need, that know that they cannot claim the kingdom as a right. The kingdom belongs to those who stopped negotiating with the king and who instead surrendered to him. That's how one enters the kingdom. John Stott expresses it like this. In his way, right at the beginning of his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus contradicted all human judgments and all nationalistic expectations of the kingdom of God. The kingdom is given to the poor, not the rich, the feeble, not the mighty, to little children humble enough to accept it, not to soldiers who boast that they can obtain it by their own prowess. In our Lord's own day, it was not the Pharisees who entered the kingdom, who thought they were rich, so rich in merit that they thanked God for their accomplishments, nor the zealots who dreamed of establishing the kingdom by blood and sword, but tax collectors and prostitutes, the rejects of society, who knew that they were so poor they could offer nothing and achieve nothing. All they could do was cry to God for mercy, and he heard their cry. And so to those who would come before the cross, who know they are so poor they can offer nothing and achieve nothing, who can only cry to God for mercy, he hears you. And on you, he bestows an identity, not as a reject of this world, but as a citizen of God's glorious kingdom. Not someday, not later, but right now. And the second thing we learn is that our identity is declared by the king, and we are called blessed. See, our king goes further in establishing our identity. He confers a status on that identity. He calls us blessed. Now, it doesn't take much to realize that the definition of the word blessed in this text differs drastically to what we observe in our cultural moment today. Just consider the words that immediately follow. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who are persecuted. This is very different to how we would expect an influencer to use the word today. Linguists note that in today's vocabulary, the hashtag blessed is commonly used on social media to celebrate personal success, which is just another way to say that people use this alongside self-promotional or enviable lifestyle posts. Just got promoted, hashtag blessed. Or new car today, I feel so blessed. It's another way of projecting that things are going really well for me, or I'm feeling really happy, which makes the statement kind of like a sanctified brag. Now, this doesn't mean that God doesn't bring good gifts. He certainly does. We see testimonies of provision, protection, and healing, even in our own community. But the point is this: Jesus is clearly using the word differently. Poverty, mourning, hunger, and thirst, these do not make for Instagrammable moments. And the contradiction existed in ancient times too. The Greek word that is translated into the word blessed that we see in this text is the word makarios. In classic Greek literature, makarios described it as a state of ideal, enviable well-being, a life so secure and flourishing that it seemed untouched by ordinary human suffering. It was often used to refer to either the Greek gods or the extremely wealthy, both typically representing enviable lifestyles. It's the type of lifestyles that people would post on Instagram. So in Greek culture, makarios described what people thought was the highest possible state of human flourishing. Jesus takes this word and he turns those expectations upside down. The truly blessed are not powerful. They're not wealthy. They're not secure. Jesus uses the word to describe a state of being favored by God. And through that favor, his people are truly flourishing. Our blessedness has nothing to do with our external circumstances or our feelings of happiness, which can be subjective. Our king is making, in this passage, an objective statement about what he thinks of his people. Our blessedness is a status conferred on us by the king himself. And that means that the blessed life is not the comfortable lifestyle. It is a life that belongs to the king. And the third thing is that our identity is shaped. We have a particular character. If the first beatitude tells us who belongs to the kingdom, and the word blessed tells us how the king regards his citizens, the next question is, what does the life of a kingdom citizen look like? And in this text, Jesus presents something of a manifesto for the Christian life, a description of what the king wanted his people to be and to do. If Jesus' use of the word blessed turned expectations upside down, his description of those who are blessed completes the picture of a radical counterculture, both in that day and today. A picture that stood in stark contrast to everything that the culture of the time defined as success. Strength, power, wealth, the lack of struggle and suffering. It's a contrast that is as true today as it was then. Jesus, the King, begins to describe the character of his people. And it's not to be confused with a checklist. It's not a list of rules for a blessed life or a list of criteria to enter into or to belong to the kingdom. It's a picture of the kind of people who live under the rule of a king. And as we read through these Beatitudes, a pattern begins to emerge. Kingdom people are marked by a radical different posture towards God, towards themselves, and towards others. Towards God, kingdom citizens live a life of total dependence on the king. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Kingdom people are people who recognize that the world is not as it should be. They mourn over sin. They feel the brokenness of the world. They hunger for righteousness, for things in the world to be made right. Neither are kingdom people spiritually self-satisfied. They are people who know their need for God. They long for His righteousness. They long for His kingdom to come. And Jesus promises in this text that they will be satisfied. And towards themselves, kingdom citizens live a life of meekness. Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek." Now, meekness is often misunderstood. While the world often equates meekness with weakness, I think it's quite the opposite. It means strength that is submitted to the king, and which is therefore under his control. It is the opposite of pride and self-assertion. The meek person does not need to dominate or prove themselves. They are secure in their relationship with God. In a world that prizes power and self-promotion, kingdom people live differently. They do not grasp for control. They trust the king. And Jesus promises to them, they will inherit the earth. And towards others, kingdom people live a life of mercy and peace. Jesus turns his focus outward. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. Kingdom people reflect the heart of their king. They extend mercy because they have received mercy. They pursue peace because they belong to the Prince of Peace. This does not mean that they avoid conflict at all costs, but it does mean that they seek reconciliation rather than division. They seek healing rather than hostility. They seek restoration rather than revenge. And Jesus said, they will be called children of God. Their lives begin to reflect the character of their king. And if we look closely at this portrait of kingdom people, we realize something remarkable. These Beatitudes do not only describe the character of the citizens of the kingdom, but they describe the king himself. Jesus is the truly poor in spirit who lived in complete dependence on his Father. Jesus is the one who mourned over the brokenness of the world. Jesus is the one who hungered and thirsted for righteousness. Jesus is the merciful one who forgave sinners and welcomed the outcast. Jesus is the peacemaker who reconciles us to God. The character that Jesus describes for the citizens of his kingdom is the very character that he embodies. And as we belong to him, our lives begin to take on the likeness of the king. But our identity is costly. We are a people opposed. Jesus ends with a sobering reality, Matthew 5:11-12. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Notice that the text changes here. We're not talking about people, we're talking about you. Jesus is talking to each one of us. And a life shaped by the kingdom will not be welcomed by the world. Because this kingdom is simply too different. It's too revolutionary. The kingdom doesn't exist as some heavenly Switzerland, remaining neutral in global matters, minding its own business. The values of the kingdom are too different. It stands too directly opposed to the things the world esteems. It aggravates the world. Meekness over power and self-promotion. Mercy instead of retaliation. Righteousness instead of compromise. This has all the makings of confrontation. And so Jesus prepares his people for something difficult. There will be insults. There will be persecution. There will be false accusations. It's not a matter of if, but when. And the king gives us hope. His people may suffer in this world, but they belong to a greater kingdom, which we are still to see in all of its glorious fullness. Throughout the Beatitudes, Jesus has been describing people who belong to his kingdom. A people who are blessed, not because life is easy, but because they belong to the King. There is a tension in these words. We mourn, but the world is still broken. We hunger for righteousness, but injustice still surrounds us. We long for peace, but conflict still remains. I guess that's the news headline of the moment, right? The Beatitudes show us something that is already true. God's kingdom has broken into the world through the ministry of Jesus. It's here. It is here. But it also shows us that something is still to come. The fullness of that kingdom is still to be made known. And maybe living in this tension just feels too much. Life is hard. Life is hard. We struggle. As much as the King calls us blessed, there is no guarantee that life is going to be easy. And maybe you find yourself in that moment. Maybe you are hungry and thirsty. Maybe you are mourning. Maybe you are crying out and saying, God, why can I not see and experience the fullness of your kingdom right now? But the Bible gives us hope. It shows us that those promises will finally come to completion. That living in this tension, experiencing this kind of suffering, is a temporary thing. It will resolve. And to see how it does, you can just skip right on ahead to the end of the Bible, to Revelation. Revelation 7:16-17. Never again will they hunger. Never again will they thirst. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And later, Revelation 21:4, He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. Revelation paints the picture of the promises in the Beatitudes fulfilled. The final manifestation of the kingdom of heaven. His enemies overthrown. Those who mourn, comforted. Those who hunger, satisfied. And those who belong to the King, they see his face.